To try and gauge some of the lasting effects of the impeachment trial of President Clinton, we're going to turn to the next generation. We're joined today by some of the members of the class of Government 235, Legislative Processes, at Georgetown University. It's a course that examines the inner workings of Congress, and their teacher is Assistant Professor Michael Bailey. Welcome, Professor Bailey.
Good morning.
And let me introduce the students to you. First is Karen Travers. She's a junior and a government major from Bluebell, Pennsylvania. Welcome, Karen.
Hi.
Homer Carlisle is a junior and a government major from Auburn, Alabama. Welcome.
Good morning.
Doug Wardlow is a junior. He's a government major from Eagan, Minnesota. Welcome, Doug.
Hi.
And Irina Politzer is a junior and a government major from New Orleans, Louisiana. Welcome to you, Irina.
Hi.
First of all, let me ask the students, how many of you are interns on Capitol Hill?
I am currently.
You are? Karen is?
Yeah. I am as well.
And you are, Doug?
And okay. I've interned in past summers also.
So you've worked on the Hill, too. How about you, Irina?
I haven't interned.
Not yet.
No.
All right. How closely did you follow the proceedings, though? I mean, is there anyone here that listened to it or watched it on TV as much time as possible?
Quite a bit, actually. I
you
watched
did,
it quite
Doug?
A bit, yeah.
What was it that compelled you?
It just, I found it kind of disturbing that, you know, the President of the United States, well, in my opinion, put himself above truth and justice, and I thought that I wanted just to see how it would come out, because I was very concerned about the political arena, what they would do about it, and the senators, in my opinion, failed.
Can I get some other impressions from some of you about the proceedings and whether or not you believe that, number one, our system does work, and number two, perhaps was justice served? Homer?
If anything, I would have to argue that the system does work, and it works because what we've gone through is not necessarily, I would say, a real constitutional or, you know, crisis or moral crisis even. It's a political situation. I've watched these events, and all I see is, you know, one side tries to take a swipe to get a little political points, and the other side fights back, and it's nothing more than give and take. And after a while, it's not the big moral issue. It's not an issue which, you know, I think we'll remember 10 years from now as being significant. It's our sex scandal, which has kept us entertained.
How about you, Irina?
I think that the process gave me more, made me more optimistic. In many countries, the challenge of a leader would have been a ripe time for revolution or rebellion or whatever. And here, life went on as usual, and people like myself could just kind of watch the headlines but weren't worried about the stability of the government, that there would be a governmental collapse or anything. So it gave me a lot more optimism about the strength and stability of our system.
Professor Bailey, let me ask you, how have you been treating, you know, this day-to-day development in this particular story for the last year? How have you been treating it in your class? How has it affected the way that you present material to your class?
Well, initially, it was pretty exciting to have when the story broke. There was a lot of uncertainty about what happened. There was a lot of uncertainty about what Congress could do. And there was it prompted a lot of very interesting debates about what the proper role of the president, you know, what happened and what business of ours is it. But then as time wore on, the wheels of justice, or whatever we want to call the impeachment process, really slowed down. And it was really hard to generate interest or to really justify using class time to talk about the specific day-to-day items. And it was scandal fatigue definitely became a pretty serious issue.
Scandal fatigue.
Yes, absolutely.
Did you all feel that way? Did you all get fatigued by this?
Yeah.
You're nodding your head.
Yeah, I followed it pretty closely from the committee hearings in the House on, and only in the last like 3 weeks I've just gotten really sick of it. I've been very bored with it. I think it was more exciting to me when it was on the House side. That's where I work, so it was a lot more interesting to follow it there because of the people that were involved, etc. But now I think it's just gotten way too drawn out, and kind of glad it's over, I guess.
Mm. Professor Bailey, how do you think history is going to treat this president?
Well, I mean, clearly he has been stained by this, but I think history will treat him as an effective president who had his own personal problems. But his effectiveness as a president was effective in a, you know, time of prosperity, and no one is going to claim that this country would have dissolved without him. So he'll just, I think, in go down as a good politician who had some personal problems and just kind of rank in the middle of the pack.
How about you, Doug?
The economy was doing good and is doing good throughout his presidency, and I think that's completely unconnected to anything he did. If anything, it's because the Republicans haven't let him do anything bad. But but beyond that, I think history will treat him as he should be treated. I think he will go down in history as like a president who had no regard for justice and truth and just placed his political career above what is right for the country.
Do you think the office of the president itself has been tarnished by all of this?
I think the office of the president has been very much tarnished. I think it's set a horrible precedent that we elected a man who concerns himself with the political career and with his political career and with his own good rather than the common good. And when a ruler starts concerning himself with his own good instead of the common good, he becomes a tyrant and needs to be removed. Luckily, our political system does that because he'll be out of there after 2000.
Karen, what do you think? How do you think history is going to treat this president?
I can't think of a single initiative or legislative business that might define his two terms. Certain presidents you associate with scandal, like Warren G. Harding, right away you think of the Teapot Dome scandal. And I think in 50 years, when they're reading about this in textbooks, they're not going to talk about a crime bill or a higher education bill, but it's going to be that he was the second sitting president to be impeached through the House and have this process. And you know, whether you think he's done great things for the country or not, that's going to be the defining factor, I think.
You think the office has been tarnished?
I think so, and I think the maybe not more important, but just as important, is that the election process, I think, is going to be very different. I think a lot of people, if they have any sort of scandal skeleton in their closet, are definitely going to be a bit more hesitant to enter themselves into the public arena as a candidate.
I do want to follow up on that, but first I want to give Homer a chance. What do you think? How is history going to treat this president?
Yes, the office is tarnished. No one wants to hear about illicit acts in the Oval Office. And it really does bother me to think that, you know, our president is concentrating about thinking about his mistress rather than, you know, the affairs of our country. But at the same time, it's not the duty of our public officials like Ken Starr to ask, you know, questions about, you know, the personal life and the private life of the president. And for that reason, I think this will just pass over. It's not going to be a major tarnish, and there's no great moral decay in our leadership.
Hmm. One thing this whole thing has highlighted is the private lives of public people. And some of you have mentioned perhaps an effect this is going to have. Should a politician's life be an open book?
I think it has to be an open book. I mean, what you stand for and what you do in office is reflective of who you are. And every decision you make has to be judged, and it will be judged by the public. And sometimes, you know, one's decision is related to past issues and past behaviors, and you have to be able to judge what our leaders do and will do in the future. At the same time, though, there is a fine line, and I think the bedroom falls beyond what the public's scope might should be.
I agree with Homer in the sense that there are some questions that perhaps should not be asked of our public officials. However, I think that just because the question shouldn't be asked doesn't mean that you can lie in response to it. If you lie to cover something up, then that makes it 10 times worse in my mind.
I'd have to agree with Homer to some extent because, yes, you know, they are public leaders and they should be role models and examples, and their lives need to be open books to an extent. But I'd have to disagree. I think that even dishonesty about what goes on in the bedroom and even dishonesty about that kind of thing needs to be looked at, because if someone is dishonest and unvirtuous in one area of their life, it's going to spill out into other areas. And I don't buy into this idea that there's a distinction between the public and the private life, and that we have no business looking into his private life, because Bill Clinton is one man. He's not two men. And if he's dishonest in one place, it'll spill over into other areas. And we need to be looking at the moral character of our leaders, because they need to be our role models.
How many of you think you're going to go into public office, government service?
I'm planning on it.
You are?
Yes.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to work on Capitol Hill after graduation.
In what capacity?
Right now, but this could change in a year and a half, but right now I want to work in a press office, dealing communications, you know, or press aide for a...
But you have no plans to run for office?
Well, yeah, I'd actually like to, but I try not to, like, talk about this too much. I don't want to jinx myself, and people are starting to, like, store up stories on me now or whatever. If they have that in mind, you know, you never know what people are going to come out of the woodwork with in a couple of years. But eventually I'd like to, but I mean, that's another 20 years down the road, and gosh knows what the situation, the political situation is going to be like in that time.
How about you, Homer? Are you going to run?
Someday down the road. I mean, I would love to, you know, be a member of Congress. I'd love to maybe, you know, serve something even in a lesser capacity, state representative. But, and that was my idea when I came to, you know, D.C. to go to school at Georgetown. I wanted to be, you know, around the politics. I wanted to work in a public office, work for my congressman. And I have to admit, I don't have the same view of public service now that I once had. But that's not necessarily, I think, because of my experience with Bill Clinton. I mean, I was thoroughly disappointed with my president. He was the first president I voted for. And I was highly disappointed when all these scandals came out. But then again, what's really gotten to me is not the scandal or the sex. It's just the nature of politics. How, for one to survive in the American political system, one has to be willing to fight every day, every night. And it's a war of words. And it's not something I necessarily am sure if I can do all the time. I like to think of myself as a nice person. And, you know, calling, you know, your enemies this, that, and the other to stay on top is sometimes, I think it's in contrast with my personality and my beliefs.
Mm. How about you, Doug?
Yeah, I'm interested in running for some type of office. I mean, looking way down the road, I don't know what's going to happen, but I'd like to go back to Minnesota, and where I know a lot of people, and I know the area, and I know the state, and I'd like to represent, you know, people back there and do what good I can. But as Homer was saying, you know, in politics, you need to fight, and you need to fight to stay on top every single day, and Bill Clinton's really good at doing that.
Irene, I didn't ask you, though. Are you interested in going into public office?
I've never been interested in running for office, and this is only bolstered my decision. I'm way too idealistic for the fight. I don't like to fight, first of all, but I have my opinions and my morals and my ideals, and I'm not willing to compromise, and that's the great art. I mean, I'm not saying that's a bad thing about American politics. That's the greatest thing about American politics, is that it's a system of compromise, and you don't get one person's decision imposed upon everyone. You get kind of a hybrid of everyone and their decisions and their beliefs. But I would not be good at the whole compromising of my ideals and my morals.
Professor Bailey, I'm going to leave the last word to you. What advice are you giving these young people, you know, some of whom are committed to the idea of government service, but given the atmosphere in which that government service can be achieved?
Right. Well, my concern with all this scandal having kind of dominated so much talk of politics recently is that this will lead to young people being very cynical about the process. But I think when we step back and look at it with a little bit of detachment, that what we get out of it is, first, is a really healthy skepticism about the people in the process. Whatever side you're on, you know, you can find people on the other side who I think legitimately, there's legitimate cause to be skeptical of them. But with that healthy skepticism, then we can also look at the way the system worked. And for me, at least personally, I think the system did work. And so that if people are healthily skeptical, they can be optimistic about the way the system can deal with these kind of issues.
I want to thank the students and the professor who have joined us today. They're from the class of Government 235 Legislative Processes at Georgetown University. Karen Travers, thank you.
Thank you.
Homer Carlyle, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Doug Wardlow, thank you.
Thank you.
And Irina Pulitzer, thank you.
It was nice to be here.
And Professor Michael Bailey, thank you very much.